Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver, and we are so glad that you are listening to the podcast today. We try to bring you the very best and most content-rich podcast in the state when it comes to public policy and politics and things that are going on in state government and also at the federal level that affect us right here in North Carolina. We'd like for you to spread the word. Encourage your friends and your family to listen to the program. You can invite them to go to freedomactionnetwork.com and listen to the show there. You can have it downloaded into your computer by the RSS feed, or encourage your friends and family to just have the show dropped into their phone or their computer from the iTunes or Google Play Store every single day. Again, we are doing our very best to bring you content that is full and rich and features folks like the Speaker of the North Carolina House of Representatives, Tim Moore, and Senator Phil Berger, the President Pro Tem of the Senate. We also have included and added to our list of regular guests many of the congressmen who represent our state in Washington. We have a whole raft, as Andy Griffith used to say, of members of the General Assembly who come on the show regularly, as well as the leading voices from the political science world, like Dr. Andy Taylor from NC State and Dr. Michael Bitzer from Catawba College, Dr. Susan Roberts from Davidson, and on it goes. We are doing our very best to make this your one-stop destination for what matters in North Carolina. So please spread the word. Encourage your friends and family and yourself to follow us on Twitter at WhatMattersNC. Like our Facebook page, facebook.com/WhatMattersNC. You can tweet at me at Mark Shiver. We'd love to engage with you in social media. So we don't take you for granted. We appreciate you listening. And as we approach the new year, keep this in mind. It is going to be more important than ever before to stay informed and in touch with the things that are going on in the General Assembly, with a Republican majority in the House and the Senate, a Democrat governor, and the dynamic there is going to be interesting, to say the least. So thank you very much for listening. We appreciate you, and we are so excited to bring you the very best of what matters in North Carolina. Well, it's Friday, and it's always a good thing when it's Friday here at What Matters in North Carolina, because that means we get to talk with Tim Boyum. He is the anchor of Capital Tonight at the Time Warner Cable News Channel. And Tim, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. Great to be on, as always.
Well, you went away for a few days and came back, and the whole state was in a great upheaval. So please don't leave anymore.
Yeah, I grabbed a few cocktails in Dominican Republic, and apparently the Republicans allegedly grabbed power. So, but you know what? You all saved some for me when I came back with the HB2 special session, so it wasn't all lost.
Well, you know, I'm sure they did that just for you because they didn't want you to feel left out. Well, today,
it's something.
Yeah, today, in the midst of all of the, or in the aftermath, I should say, of all of the goings on that have happened in the last 2 weeks, as the dust begins to clear, do you have a couple of thoughts as to what has taken place here in the end of December?
Well, you know, I mean, for what's been an incredible year, unprecedented year in politics, I guess we shouldn't be surprised that we went out with a bang, right? But usually December of an election year is quiet. What I do think it is done is it set the tone for 2017. I've mentioned this a few times. Bev Perdue had it easy breezy compared to what Roy Cooper has had. You know, they had a honeymoon period. They were meeting, and it has been brutal before Roy Cooper even takes office. And so I think the tone is set, and it's going to be fascinating to move forward. I don't think the HB2 story is over with, but I'm also not sure where the path is to get it done at this point because people are so, you know, dug in. And so I think there's a lot of uncertainty as we head into 2017, particularly because there's elections. And so for those of us that are sort of inside the political bubble, I think next year could be as busy as this year, just in a different way.
Well, it's nice to be inside that bubble sometimes, isn't it?
It took people outside of the bubble. I'm not sure how it's all going to impact.
But. Yeah, exactly. Keeps us busy anyway. So I was thinking that there might be a, as you call, a honeymoon period, a grace period, a time of, you know, backslapping and promises to get along and bipartisanship. And I guess that's totally out the window. The tone, as you say, has been set. It doesn't seem to be amiable and conciliatory. And unless they decide to regroup and, you know, start over in January, I agree with you. It could be a very, very tense and, well, interesting year.
Yeah, and I mean, the finger-pointing has been remarkable the last 2 weeks. In the press releases, the instant blame and finger-pointing at Roy Cooper in press releases practically before votes were even completed, and the same vice versa. Roy Cooper and many of the Democrats blaming Republicans for things that are going on. I everyone was talking about it's the most partisan ever. And it might be. In some ways, though, ironically, we're talking about it so much, it may not matter because we're still in a similar position we were with Pat McCrory in there, where the Republicans hold as supermajorities in the legislature, and the legislature is the powerful governmental body in North Carolina, has been since the beginning of North Carolina. So in some ways, things may not have changed much. The big caveat there is there may, and some say likely, will be elections in 2017. And so you never know in an off year what turnout might be, who might be motivated to get to the polls. And so, it's a fascinating time to be sort of observing North Carolina politics. I'm not so sure the citizens are happy about it, regardless of what's being done. But it's challenging times to be a consultant, to be a politician on both sides of the aisle.
Our guest, Tim Boyum of Capital Tonight, does an excellent job as the anchor of that program on the Time Warner Cable News Channel. Here's something I haven't heard anybody else talking about, so I wanted to run this by you. Obviously, within the caucus, the membership of each party, on the Republican side, are we at all raising an eyebrow that perhaps, particularly Senator Berger, this is probably the first legislation where there was widespread defection among his caucus, among his Senate Republican peers. Many of them did not vote for the repeal that he put forward on HB2. Is that just, you think, an issue-centric occurrence? Or do you think maybe his control, which has heretofore been ironclad, may be slipping a bit?
Well, that's a great question, and I've had these conversations behind the scenes as well, because it was fascinating how that played out on Wednesday night. And, I think these defections have happened behind the scenes before. You've probably heard about caucus meetings and what they're like. And Democrats had the same thing. They would battle it out, and I mean, the word brutal is used often about some of these battles and caucus meetings, but when they get out, they come out unified, or at least close enough to unified where they know what the vote's going to be. And so these things don't happen. I mean, that's why you didn't see the House vote on a bill at all, because they knew what the vote was going to be. I was surprised that Senator Berger's name was on the bill because of the potential with it. But, maybe they wanted to give him credit if it was repealed because they were mad that Roy Cooper was taking credit for cutting a deal on this issue. But you're right. Senator Berger has sort of this mythical aura of power around him almost, that he's untouchable, invincible, he's the most powerful. And, I mean, when he talked to the media after that vote went down, you could see the anger. You could hear the anger like I've never seen Phil Berger before. And so I do think it sort of publicly shows, the divide. But I'm not so sure it's much worse behind the scenes. It's just that we're getting – it's sort of peeling back what some of those caucus meetings are like. But who knows? What it means moving forward, I don't know. There were threats about double bunking and redistricting and primary opponents going on behind the scenes, from my understanding. And so does something like this cause problems for some of those individuals? I don't know. But it was some political theater, no question.
Well, you're exactly right. And, in the House, we expect there to be more defections just because there are more members. But it's really remarkable that we saw that in the Senate. And I think everyone would agree that Berger probably misses Tom Apodaca about right now.
Yeah, no question. And there was comfort level with them too as well, about how they can handle things. And, so I don't think there's any question about that. The one caveat I will say to everything I mentioned was that HB2 is unlike another issue I can remember covering. It's just so different. It's so emotionally charged. It's so divisive even within caucuses. And so, perhaps this is just a blip in the road or a one-time occurrence, but it's something to take note of and watch as we move forward into 2017. The one thing is that it is an election year next year, potentially, so I'm not so sure we're going to see a ton of divisive issues, but you never know. We'll see.
Tim, in terms of the, as you said, going forward, what are we going to do? This is really... been divisive in terms of shining the light on the power of a municipality versus the power of the General Assembly. One thing that's gotten lost, unless you're, like you said, inside the bubble, is that Charlotte's ordinance was really a clear violation of its constitutionally endowed power as a municipality, and it was an overreach. And yet that is not something that, I mean, we hear about that in passing in press releases and stuff like that. But it's interesting to me that that really hasn't been, the bull that they've taken by the horns on the Republican side and said, look, they just violated the Constitution. Sorry.
Well, and I'll be honest with you. I think the other side would argue that they didn't necessarily violate the Constitution. But I think, look, this is a tough philosophical argument for Republicans. You know, they believe in government at the local level. They believe in small government. But North Carolina is not a home rule state, and the state basically controls what cities and counties and local governments can do. And I don't think that they've forgotten that, but there are people out there who say, look, I mean, I heard another talk show host who is very conservative say, I don't necessarily agree that they should be telling the state. If Charlotte wants to raise their minimum wage, which technically that's another home rule argument, they can't do that anyways, regardless of HB2. But if they want to do that and, people leave there, that's their problem. The market will resolve itself. And that's a very conservative belief. But in this issue, Republicans are so strong-willed about, an issue like this that they're going to use their rights, and that the legislature rules the state, and then that's where the power rests right now, and they have the power there. So why relinquish any of that? But it's a challenging issue. How much control do you give cities? And if you're a free market person, what do you do? But look, emotions ran 2016. Whether it was anger, whether it was passion for an issue, and facts don't matter. A lot of times, other people's opinions don't matter a lot of times. And so those types of things get lost. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I saw on national television people talking about this issue about businesses wouldn't be able to allow transgender people to use the bathroom of choice. That's not what HB2 did, and that's not what the law is. It's been a tough year to for the facts.
Yeah, well, that's typically the case in a lot of political things. But, I used to work with another show host years ago who would say, don't let the facts get in the way of your preconceived notions. But anyway, one last HB2 thought. I found it remarkable, Tim, that there was a willingness on the part of not only Senator Berger, but many in the Senate who have long held a conservative view and can be, recognized as a strong conservative, to, for lack of a better word, Tim, abandon the notion of privacy and women's safety. And there are many on the conservative side who have stood up for the General Assembly in its passage of House Bill 2, using that very argument. Now, I'm not here to ask, whether or not that argument is true, but if you can follow me on this, I found it remarkable that they were willing to repeal House Bill 2 in the face of all of the support they've gotten from strong conservatives about the need for the bill to protect women. Am I saying that to where you can understand what I'm saying?
Totally. And motivation is the biggest question. So why would Phil Berger and Tim Moore go along with that, who most people probably believe support HB2. So why would they do that? There has to be reasons, right? Are there enough concerns about economically? And I know there's been case studies of that. You know, they've raised more jobs to overcome whatever was lost or potential loss with HB2. Or do they know that there's all sorts of companies that have chosen not to come here behind the scenes that we don't know about, and that's concerning them? Is that possible? Are they concerned about an off-year election or midterm elections in 2018, where HB2 is a major issue, and it's in 2018 would be a tough year potentially, at least historically, because of midterm election of the president that's in the White House, which is a Republican. I don't know the answers to those, but there has to be a reason for their motivation. And you're right about that privacy issue. I always ask that question as well when they talk about a repeal, because if we go back to where we were, that means transgender individuals are going to be using the bathroom of their choice. It's just the way it was before. But this has always been a tough question, because if you put HB2 in place and the concern is privacy and children, and you're concerned about, you know, people that look different going to the bathroom, that's the way it would be under HB2. You'd have a male looking like a woman going into the men's restroom. And so this issue is just incredibly challenging. And I wish I could tell you what I knew the motivation of Phil Berger and Tim Moore were, but I'm not certain today what that is.
Well, I'm not either. We're on the same page. And I think there are a lot of people that would fall on that side of the ledger, because it certainly is, as you have said from the outset, a very complex issue. One last thing, and this is not particularly HB2, but Senator Joel Ford looks like he's going to take on Jennifer Roberts for the mayor of Charlotte. And already there's been some social media spin about her mishandling of all of this. Your thoughts there? Does he have a chance? Is she well-liked in Charlotte?
Well, and that is going to be, I think, one of the top stories in 2016 statewide, is that Charlotte mayoral race, because that is also likely going to be a referendum on HB2 in the city of Charlotte. And you have Joel Ford, who's a pro-business type Democrat, who's, you know, going to push Jennifer Roberts on this, you know, like crazy. And but Vi Lyles, who's the mayor pro tem, she's running as well. And so do they kind of cancel each other's votes out and you know, does Jennifer Roberts squeak through because of that? I don't think there's any question Jennifer Roberts is going to get a significant amount of money from the LGBT organizations and the like, because they'd like to keep her in place as mayor. But I don't know where the city of Charlotte's going to sit on this issue. And so I do think, you know, Joel Ford is, I mean, you probably know him as well. He's not afraid to confront people in a negative way. He's very smart. He's very pro-business, which is, you know, what Charlotte's very focused on. He's a formidable opponent, and he would be a challenge in the debate, I think, for Jennifer Roberts. The question is, after a year like 2016, are people going to be paying attention, and how much will Charlotteans, you know, put into this race? But, boy, it's going to be a doozy.
He is larger than life at times also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he comes
out. That's
what
I mean in the debate. He will not be afraid to confront her. He's, you know, he's a performer, right? I mean, and so that's a challenge for Jennifer Roberts, no question about it. We have him on the show with Charlie Jeter, who's now a former lawmaker, and I barely even have to say anything. I just let him go, and they go for 8 minutes, and we go home for the night.
Exactly.
So it'll be fun. There's no question about that for those of us in the media.
Governor McCrory, kind of fading, exiting stage left. He put forward his, the budget he was supposed to put forward. Big teacher raise, big transportation bond. Cooper going to go with that or do his own thing?
Oh, Cooper will do his own thing. There's no question about that. I think you'll see a budget. You know, I think, look, Cooper is a former budget writer, so he's going to put – I don't think he's going to put forward a budget that is, you know, obnoxious with – massive raises and stuff. It's going to be pretty methodical, I think. But it'll have different priorities, I'll put it that way, than the Republican budget and Pat McCrory. They do agree on the transportation bond. So I think you could see a transportation bond in Governor Cooper's budget. You will see some sort of teacher pay plan, I'm sure, putting forward. But I have a hunch that'll be a doorstop once it gets to the legislature, that budget.
Well, Tim, I really appreciate that you have been with us almost literally every Friday, and we look forward to 2017. You are really without peer in what you do. And I just am honored to have you as our guest. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we'll look forward to talking to you in 2017.
Well, you guys do great work. Congratulations on everything you've done this year. It's an honor for me to be a part of your program as well. And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to your family as well. We look forward to a fun 2017.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We appreciate that you have taken time out of your day or evening to listen, and we certainly don't take it for granted. We appreciate every single time that you download the show, that you listen. We appreciate you spreading the word. And one promise I can make to you as the host of this show, we will work harder and harder to continue to bring you the very best content of any podcast in the state when it comes to things that matter in North Carolina. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at WhatMattersNC, or you can like our Facebook page, facebook.com/WhatMattersNC. I'd love to engage with you personally on social media at Mark Shiver. Remember to tell your friends and family. They can go to freedomactionnetwork.com, find the show there, or in the iTunes and Google Play stores. Until next time, my name is Mark Shiver. Thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.